It's essentially when an employee does the bare minimum required to keep their job. Some ways it can be seen as they're setting boundaries and they're improving their work-life balance. It's a sign of burnout.
I think I'm going to be a new advocate of quiet quitting.
I think you're an advocate of the first version of quiet quitting, which is boundaries.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to 9 to 5 Mom with the Pod. I am your host, Fran, and today we have an incredible guest, Ali Kushner. She is a startup founder and maternal health advocate as the founder of BeeKing, a play date matching and scheduling platform launching nationally in 2025. Ali is on a mission to help parents find a real connection because the village doesn't build itself. I was going to talk about something completely different today. We literally changed it at the last second because Ali actually brought something to my attention that I had no idea about. I mean, I don't know the term, but I know what she was talking about, and it was quiet quitting, right?
Quiet quitting, yeah.
Because we already started talking about it, but like, what is this?
It's controversial, I think, depending on who you ask, but it's essentially when an employee does the bare minimum required to keep their job. So they don't go above and beyond. They're not out there looking for extra projects or what have you. Mm-hmm. In some ways, it can be seen as they're setting boundaries and they're improving their work-life balance, which totally fair.
I'm fair with that.
Here for it. But on the flip side, a lot of people talk about quite this idea in the way that it's a sign of burnout, that people have been going above and beyond. They have job dissatisfaction. And so they're just doing what's on the job description or what's expected of them because they're like, okay, I'm done and I'm biding my time. And maybe I'm looking for a job. Maybe I'm, you know, interviewing for jobs. Maybe I'm just waiting, you know, to get the axe, whatever it is. But quiet quitting can be viewed in these two different ways. And I think, at least for me, the way I've been exposed to it has been the latter, which is that people are unhappy for whatever reasons. They're doing the bare minimum to get by. And they're just waiting to see what happens.
I think I'm going to be a new advocate of quiet quitting.
I think you're an advocate of the first version of quiet quitting, which is boundaries.
Yes,
which
boundaries.
Boundaries are healthy. and back in the day, like before you had a laptop that went everywhere with you, you went to your office.
So this is
definitely to advocate for return to office, whole other conversation. You went to the office, you started up your computer, you worked, you shut down, and you went home. Mm. I mean, there was even a time in life when people didn't have cell phones. So like you actually disconnected. It was like 5 o'clock, 5:30. Okay, peace, I'm out. And once, you know, not just with COVID, but even before that, once we started toting around laptops and cell phones that tether us to work, the line just became so blurry.
It did.
And it led, and it still is leading to burnout. So this is one part of the revolution, if you will. There's the setting boundary aspect, which is super healthy. And the other one is this, you know, less glamorous way of viewing it, I guess.
I know that I had this issue where I've had a terrible luck. It's not terrible, but it's, you know, it's just like a blessing and a curse at the same time, where like I overdo it. And that's what I used to do. This was me pre-kids, right? Like I would overdo it where I'm an overachiever. I want to be the receptionist. I want to be the accounts payable. I'll do whatever. I'll volunteer. I'll plan your event.
Do whatever you do to get the
whatever. Now that I'm like post-kid, like I'm a mom, we need boundaries and very strict boundaries, because now I have all these components, again, that leads to burnout because you already have more responsibilities on your plate. But I am I'm an advocate for that, for boundaries and don't burn yourself out, obviously, because, you know, that to me, just to prove that you're self-worth, I'm not with it. I'm definitely not with it.
I think there was also a time, and maybe it still exists depending on how the economy is and the job market. And I definitely grew up this way, that it was the mentality that you do whatever you need to do to be indispensable or to be quote unquote irreplaceable. And no one's ever irreplaceable. Like if something happened to you tomorrow, the job would be posted. And, you know,
if you
needed to next week, there would be another butt in the seat. That's just the reality. Mm-hmm. So when you take on more responsibilities, it's almost this safeguard that we think we're creating to mm-hmm. protect ourselves or to de-risk the possibility of, right. of losing our jobs for whatever reason.
Right.
But it does lead to burnout. And what you said is very, it kind of just hits the nail on the head for me. Like the BC before children.
The BC. Yeah. I love BC. That. BC. The BC.
I was going to say BK, but like, no, not for no. me, but BC before we had children.
Yep.
And I was the same way that like, I wouldn't realize that it got dark outside mm-hmm. and I would be like plugging away at my laptop, doing whatever it was, answering emails. I'd think of something at 9 o'clock at night and be like, oh, let me just do a little something. Yeah. That doesn't happen when you have children.
Yeah.
My kids are very little. So, you know, saying, oh, mommy has to send an email.
Right.
Doesn't register. And also, like, I want to spend time with my kids.
Yeah.
And so there has to be this on-off switch. And because it's so blurry, it's so malleable, that line, this idea of quiet quitting. And again, I love and I definitely believe in that first version of it, which is setting boundaries.
Yeah.
But again, more often than not, I think when people say quiet quitting, it is because there is discontent and people are quit. This is their way of quitting without going in, you know, resignation, throwing it down on the desk or an email right. and saying, peace, I'm out. If they're like, okay, you know, I'm just going to phone it in. And so my take on this is really, you know, at my job, I have my time box hours. Like I can only work from 9 to 5, 5:30, mm-hmm. 6 if I plan it with childcare.
That's the whole day.
That's the whole day. And like, that is a normal 40-hour a week job. Yeah. And within that time, I have to be super productive. I have to, you know, have my head down, do what I need to do, have the plan. I can't, you know, that's dilly-dally around, whatever. And that's fine. But within that time, life also happens. Mm. And it's, for me, it's about setting those boundaries, but setting them in a way that honors the new identity that I've shifted to right. in becoming a mom. So when I put on my calendar, like this is my time block for my lunch on whatever day it is, because I have a standing appointment to pick up my daughter from school and walk her to an activity, I don't just, you know, skulk away and say, oh, well, I have a doctor's appointment or make an excuse. I'm like, no, I'm picking up my child.
Right.
That's my lunch. I'm doing lunch.
Right.
And I'm not going to feel bad about it. It's I'm owning that this is my life. And by putting it out in the open, I hope that my younger coworkers who eventually might choose to have children will see it kind of as a normalizing factor. We're talking about it. It's not bad. It doesn't mean I'm not right. committed. It just means this is part of existence. This is part of my life.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite quitting, even though on paper, I guess it could look like that because I'm right. just doing
You're
my
doing
job.
The minimum kind of thing.
Again, I hate that we view that as doing the bare minimum because right. if you were hired to do a job and you were doing everything that like is required of you and you're doing it well, not like you're just checking the boxes, but you're like, I am doing it well.
Correct.
Okay, so if there's a bell curve, if you're having an annual review, let's say.
Oh.
And like just to like put it in that perspective, and you have, okay, needs improvement, hitting the mark, you know, doing their job and exceeds whatever expectations. Mm-hmm. Doing your job is not bad. Like right. that's like solid, cool. I'm doing what I was hired to do. I'm the little engine that could choo-choo. Like we're doing great. You don't want to be on the bottom end because that means you're not performing.
Right.
And the other end, you know, again, BC.
BC.
There are days when I am on that high end and I want to, and my natural inclination is to, mm-hmm. to do that. But again, that takes more of you, and there are only 24 hours in a day, and your battery as a human only contains so much juice.
Yeah, no, not, and BC, I didn't have that much. You know, like our batteries had a limit. Imagine AC after children.
Gotta work on this. Gotta work on
we
this.
Gotta...
AC. Okay, yeah.
Right? AC. Do we have an AC? Yeah, we do, right?
Yeah, almost AC. We'll figure it out.
We'll go with it. We invented it.
We'll go with it. I like
it. It also, like, being the overachiever, let's say you're not quite quitting and you're going the opposite direction and you're just trying to impress and do your best and just burn yourself to the point where you're burning yourself out. Now you're also hurting your social life, because that all ties in together. Now you have, by the time that you get home, you're going to be so burned out. You're not going to have time to go out. You're not going to, you're not going to want to go out. You're not going to want to actually, socialize. That's one of the reasons that you have a brand, an entire website about this, which is actually the greatest thing that we're talking about, because you have Beacon, right? Which is literally a like play date planning, which is something that I've been craving on doing forever, because I'm literally your example, your prototype.
Your case study.
I'm literally your prototype right now, because it's literally how I feel. I don't have time to go out there and meet new people. And by the way, I have already two terrible experiences meeting two different people, and I'm not doing it.
I don't blame you.
I'm not doing it. Okay.
I'm our own story, and everyone's busy, and I feel like there should be a song. Like, we all feel a little lonely, a little isolated.
Yeah.
And yeah, Beacon is launching later this year. I'm so excited, and it resonates with so many parents. And I'm not even going to say moms. I'm going to say parents, because our wait list has more than 20% of it are men.
What?
Yeah.
I am shocked. What?
Okay, but I want you to think about it like this. First of all, men, I don't want to say they don't get enough credit. Like, their parents, they're showing up. The resources aren't there to support. So you have a lot mothers who are saying, we want our husbands, the fathers, to do more. But all of the resources that do exist are very much geared just towards mothers. But that's a whole other conversation. But you have, I know at least three off the top of my head, three fathers who are stay-at-home dads.
Oh,
which is amazing.
That's great.
And yeah, it's fantastic. And imagine being a stay-at-home dad and you're trying to go out to the park and make friends. And
I see.
It's all
that's women. Tough. That's tough.
That's one example. Or you're an involved dad.
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't even say involved dad. You are a dad, because it's 2025. And when you choose to have a child, the overwhelming majority of people, you're involved. This is your kid. You brought them into the world. You want to spend time with them.
100%.
But as a man, it's hard to be like, oh, I'm going to take my kid out 10 a.m. on Saturday for, a walk in the park, or we're going to go get a bagel, a slice of pizza, whatever it is. And it would be really nice to meet up with another dad who has, similar interests that I do, whose kid is also the same age roughly as my kid, who lives in my area, who's available when I am.
Yep.
And we're not just going to get together and talk about our kids.
Right.
So I think about it like a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
With the three circles where you have, someone who lives close to me, is available when I'm available. Okay, they have a kid, next circle, who is roughly the same age as my kid. And then the third circle is we have stuff in common, aside from our children. We like the same stuff. We're actually going to be friends, adults, outside of just our caregiver status. And there's this little tiny overlap of all those three circles. Mm-hmm. And that's the trifecta. That's like the magic three.
That's amazing. Bullet. That's really cool, because it's scary as hell for me to meet a brand new person. I want to be able to trust the other person. And again, I've had two terrible experiences that I don't want to go through. And I think that's also one of the reasons why I'm terrified of I just don't even need to leave my house. Okay.
But it's like dating again.
Yes.
You found your partner. You have your kid. And now it's yeah, we're going to now date for friends. And it's hard when you don't have kids and you're just an adult and you have your work and your family and whatever.
Yeah.
It's hard to find friends. You add kids into that mix and whoa.
To be honest, I'm really happy that you're building such a beautiful brand like this, like Beacon, because I honestly would need something like that. I mean, now that you've heard my situation, it's literally I'm the perfect prototype for that. Because there are a bunch of people like me. I'm a super introvert. I don't want to go out there and meet people. I have friends and family that are great at meeting people. They just start a conversation, ignite the fire with someone, and it's good. We're friends. Like, it's happening.
So what you're talking about some people just meet others and they click.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes. But I would love to just push back on that a little bit and say, because I just love to be contrarian here.
I love it.
As a parent, your time is limited. Your bandwidth, like your mental bandwidth, is stretched like to all which ways. It's like gummy slime. Mm-hmm. And let's say you go to the park and you meet this amazing parent, and then you awkwardly say, "Hey, could we exchange numbers? We'd love to get the kids together." Mm-hmm. It seems lovely, right?
Right.
What do you think the likelihood is that you're actually going to get together? That you're going to text them, they're going to text you back, you're going to find a time that works with both of your schedules, your kids' nap schedules,
Never.
That a day where the weather is nice. It might be maybe it will happen, but it might take a month of, you know, when I get a text message, I see it, I have the intention of responding,
right.
But then life happens and literally a week will go by. And it's not that I don't want to respond to the person, I just forget or something comes up. So part of Beacon is this, it's a two-pronged platform. One is, yes, we help you find your people.
Got it. Okay.
And then the other part of that is if you have your people, either people we've introduced you to or your best friend down the street, that person you met at the playground, kids in your, parents who have kids in your kid's school, whatever it is, it's a scheduling tool for you to be able to go in and say, here's my husband's schedule. Here's my schedule. Here's my kid's schedule. You plot it all in, put in your preferences, and whoever you're connected with on the app, they can request to book a play date with your family. So you've already pre-selected, this is my availability. So you don't have to have that mental load.
Right. You don't have to have all that, literally.
The noise.
Yeah. I can see that. Honestly, I'm a shy person. If I'm, when it comes to texting... I know I'm a shy texting person, but I'm great with business. Anything that's business, sales, and like I turn it on. But when it comes to like the people that I value, like my circle, I take that relationship so serious to the point where I'm like, I don't want to bother anyone. Like,
so interesting.
It's so weird. It's the weirdest thing. And I do that all the time.
See, no one wants to talk to each other because everyone's kind of like, well, I don't know if they want to be friends. I don't
That's
know.
That's it. Having a and I'm not going to be the one to take the first step. Sorry.
This is a horrible comparison.
I know. Sorry. I need this out.
I'm going to give you a horrible comparison. You can judge me later for it. Totally fine. But there's some, I think it's a psychology something. But like when a crime happens and there are tons of witnesses to the crime, and no one does anything, it's because everyone says, oh, well, someone else will do it. And it's passing that like baton of responsibility.
There's a term for that. I don't know.
There's totally a term and I'm blanking on it.
But yeah.
I'm talking about. And I think it's the same thing that like, oh, well, if they want to be friends with me, they'll approach me.
Yeah,
and
that's me.
Over there like, oh, she wants to be friends with me. She'll approach me. And then you both just stand there and then you leave baby gym.
It is 100% true because... you know, this is why I joined these types of apps like Beacon. It's going to work out great because it's one of those things that it filters out my issue. And we build social anxiety over time. Some people may think it's weird, other people, but it's not. It's not meant to be weird. What I'm trying to say with that is that it depends on the situation and the outcome of your circumstance, especially moms, because I know that I went through this and I've never had any mental health issues ever in my entire life. Like I've never had any issues with that, you know, with the occasional anxiety, stress, you know, that sort of thing. But there was never like a highly mental issue. And, you know, AC me, the after children version of myself, I felt like after becoming a mom, my brain sort of shifted to this super anxiety, you know, everything's dangerous. Oh my gosh, I have to, you know, be careful with everything. Like I'm always constantly like on her and I don't know, it's just something changed. And I'm like, I'm just so curious to study that in psychology, like the brain before and after.
I mean, this is a whole other conversation that we could have, but I went through postpartum depression with my first, And it hit me super, super hard. Oof. I wrote an article about my experience in Motherly. And I mean, here's the headline for you, that I was literally on a platform in New York City on the subway being like, I wonder what it takes somebody to jump in front of a train. Not that I was planning on it.
But no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I was just like wondering, and I was like, oh, that's a weird thing to think about. But my brain chemistry, like my hormones are just insane. I wound up being, I think it was over 3 months I was in an intensive outpatient program, mental health program for postpartum depression. Yeah.
I didn't even know that those existed, actually. So they have programs where like they, mm-hmm. you know, because I didn't get to that level in the sense of like, I was more, I don't know if I would consider it, but I was more afraid.
Anxiety.
Yeah, I had super anxiety to the point where I thought I was going to die. Excuse me. I was going to go. I was literally, I thought that I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to be here for my daughter. I'm not going to see her grow up. I'm not going to be able to see her walk down the aisle. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get sick. Like literally, like I was going bananas. Like, and then I said, oh my gosh. And then later, you know, in time that it kind of soothes, but I never got, and I would just cry for no reason. Like literally with just no reason, I would just start crying. It was terrible.
So there's this whole spectrum of disorders called PMADS. It's, let me see if I can remember this, perinatal postpartum mood and anxiety disorders.
Oh, wow.
So it includes postpartum depression, which I think is probably the most common that people hear about. And it can manifest, like I had perinatal depression with my second daughter. I had postpartum and probably perinatal with the first one. And some people that I've met, they've had postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD, postpartum psychosis.
Oh, no.
Like there are, like, it's not just a one size fits all situation. That
agreed, yeah.
Having anxiety, again, the psychology behind it and the hormones. It's like crazy. You become a different person.
No, you are like a different person. Like, and it's so crazy. Like, I understand when moms come up to me and be like, well, I feel like I'm in a rented body. I'm like, yes, I know that feeling, like where it's not, you're you, but you're not you. And you're just like, when am I going to get her back? And a lot of the times you don't.
Yeah, so, I know we're almost close on time. But
Yes.
I will say to you, have you heard of the show Severance?
I have, and I'm dying to see it, but okay, I have not been able to.
It's dark, and there are definitely tons of interpretations, and like there's the dark component of corporate authority. I don't know if you know how you want to say it, but there's one. When I first started watching it, I was like, oh, how cool would it be? The premise is that you can sever your brain, and so you don't think about it in a work context, that when you go to work, you're a different person. You don't know everything that you're doing. Like, your brain has a switch that only exists in certain parts of your life. Very, so imagine it from a pregnancy perspective. And imagine if you could flip a switch and be like, I want to have a child, but I do not want to remember or deal with any of the issues. This is a very layered thing within the show. And like, then you're talking about, you're creating another person and taking them away, whatever. But how cool would that be to be like, I'm still myself because I just flipped the switch.
I wonder if that's like a psychology thing, like that some people could probably pull that off, like maybe that they do that, you know?
Under hypnosis.
Maybe. I mean, that's what it was for that movie Office Space. It had that similar vibe and similar color as Severance, because whenever I see the ads and stuff like that in the commercials, it's very gray, bluish, grayish vibe. And it's to put you in that, and to just wrap it up here for everyone, and I apologize for going over, it just puts you in that trance of like, oh, I'm at work, and it flips the switch. And just like an Office Space where he got hypnotized, but he couldn't get out of the hypnotism, right? Even though that was weird, because I think,
because I don't remember it.
Well, actually, I always, and can someone correct me? I have to watch the movie again also, because I haven't seen it in like about, I think it's been a few years, but he got hypnotized, right? Meaning that he couldn't switch back. But anyways, Allison, thank you so much for being here. Everyone, I'm going to leave Allison's website, Beacon, the, you know, what we were all actually talking about for half the episode, which is going to be great for me because I don't have to be an introvert anymore. But you guys can go visit the website. I'm going to leave the link below in the description so you guys can go through it directly. And again, this is a simplified play date planning website. So this is going to be great for,
for the wait list.
Yes. Join the wait list because we need that. I know I do. So I know after this whole conversation, it's like, yeah, friend, you probably need that. But anyway, thank you so much for joining me and having you today. And everyone, until next time, bye.
Bye.